So yeah, as I was just saying, I think you have a way of cutting through all of the noise, and just laying out some very, very bare facts that make people think. And so I wanted to have you on to talk about this and talk about what you've seen over the last couple of years and what your research has shown you. I would like to start by reading your opening paragraph to this post, because I think it really kind of captures the attention. You write, "The federal and most of the state governments are gone and captured. Whatever is running the federal government agencies really intends to kill you, or at least substantially injure you, damage your reproductive capacity, and repossess your assets in the process. The aim is to reduce the population and terrorize the survivors enough to establish a totalitarian control over much of the world's territory. Nobody is coming to save you. Your survival and that of your children is in your hands only. Do not comply." I imagine that you do not write these words lightly.
Oh no. This is the result of several years of an investigation into this, and also understanding the laws that govern all of this. So the current democide, it's a democide, it's indiscriminate. Other than socioeconomic, I think it's primarily targeted at let's say Western educated wealthy relatively speaking people, because the bang for the buck, as I said, this part of this has to do with taking over the assets of middle class and upper middle class, which is developed in the Western world. And that's, you eliminate one person, it's much more money versus, somebody in India or Africa. That's kind of how the financial part of this works, but there's much more to this.
I agree, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I saw COVID as two things. Number one, it ushered in kind of the surveillance state, right? And it got people used to this idea of having this app on your phone, and you can't go anywhere unless the magic app master, whoever that is, kind of lets you and approves your going to a restaurant or going back to school or whatever. The second part of that is I found it to be a massive wealth transfer campaign. Right? Because there's a reason that mom and pop coffee shops were forced to close, but Starbucks wasn't forced to close. McDonald's wasn't forced to close. All these,
Oh,
all
Walmart,
these,
yeah.
right. And all these independent kind of businesses did not survive, but all of the major chains are still with us, and they're probably even stronger than ever, aren't they?
So the chains like, Walmart and Amazon, they made huge amounts of money while little businesses were put out of business. And that's very, very important, because those little businesses, those are the, financially independent entrepreneurs who can, who, they're still, the middle class and the upper middle class and the farm, like the small farms. Again, the small farms are constantly getting so everyone, the government is now coming after them, while these corporate huge farming businesses are, getting subsidies essentially. So that it's again, it's another way of controlling. So I spoke several times with Catherine Austin Fitz, if you know her.
Sure.
And so
She's a
she
great one.
writes extensively on this, wealth transfer and financial transaction freedom and so forth. And so that's how she described it. So at the beginning of COVID, they created this tsunami of money, pumped it through this COVID exercise. So in addition to injuring, killing people, we're just talking about financial aspect. So they created this fake money infusion, which went not through economy, saying, oh, well, it goes through economy. Not quite. It went through specific channels in the economy, so that these select businesses become bigger and more powerful, because they're already controlled by the people who are doing this. And the ones that could possibly pose resistance are now eliminated with this financial coup.
Right. These are the famous PPP loans. And we found out that, these universities that were awash in money and these big mega corporations, they all got their part of it. And then independent, I mean, there were some independent businesses that got their share as well, but they had to jump through hoops and they had to go through a lot more. And it wasn't always guaranteed that they got that money. I mean,
Right.
I personally know a lot of small businesses that tried and failed to get those grants.
Yeah, exactly. So that this is another way of centralizing control through this financial exercise. And so that's how they capture the society and whatever they thought that hasn't been captured yet, it just gets eliminated through this process.
So tell us about what your work has revealed to you as to who the they are. Who exactly is the they?
Right, so it's like a layer cake, right?
Yes.
Now I am mostly focused. So what I find frustrating is that a lot of commentators in the space, like even on the so-called freedom side,
Yeah.
they prefer to ignore the most important layer, which is the federal government and specifically the military, the Department of Defense. But although they're not say so they're kind of merged all the federal agencies and executive branch into this military organization. So now it's DoD with HHS primarily, but then all the other federal agencies like USDA and FDA, they're all collaborating in this.
Yeah.
Now, so I would say that's the most important executive level that everyone prefers to forget. So what people typically say, pharma bad. Pharma bought everyone in the government, made all this stuff to profit. It's all like profit, profit. Okay, yes, there is that aspect. So pharma bad, then they skip over the federal government and they go and immediately start saying, oh, it's WHO, it's Klaus Schwab, it's WEF, it's Rockefellers, it's the Bilderberg,
Rothschilds, right?
right? So, but then they leave this gap, and I'm telling everyone, look, Klaus Schwab, yeah, he's awful. Tedros also awful. They're war criminals. But you know what? When your loved one was killed in the hospital by COVID protocol, Tedros and Klaus, they have alibi. They were not there. Right. So you need to focus on the crime scene and specifically who was there, who pushed the needle, and then who paid them to do it, which is the DoD. And that's what people prefer to ignore and say, no, well, blah, blah, especially because we're in the election year and everybody's like, no, Trump was confused and Fauci lied to him. Or alternative version of this is, oh, China attacked us. No, China didn't attack us. We gave them money to do this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that is such an important point. Right. I remember very early on in the pandemic, the narrative was, well, big pharma is kind of pushing all this stuff so they can come up with a vaccine and make more profit and make more sales. And I'm sure that was, at the very least, they were accomplices.
Yes.
I don't think they were the ones giving the orders because, yes, Pfizer can, I don't put it past a big pharma company to bend the truth or mess up, records on clinical trials in order to get their stuff on the shelf, in order to get injections in every arm. But could Pfizer convince 100 countries all across the world to lock down? I don't think so. There is something else there. And I think that's the missing gap that you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. So what, Pfizer was selected as a part of the DoD cartel. So they established this cartel they started establishing it in 2012. It started, got really going around 2017. And I published on this. I have a recording from AstraZeneca CEO and VP. I'm sorry, my dogs.
It's okay.
So I have this recording from executive meeting between Pascal Soriot and Mark Esser, who the CEO of AstraZeneca and the vice president, and they were discussing this history of how they were approached by DARPA, which is an agency within DoD, and with this plan of pandemic preparedness. They call it P3. pandemic preparedness plan, and the mastermind of it, well, at least self appointed, is Colonel Matt Hepburn, who is part of DARPA. And he approached them in 2017 and said, we're starting this collaboration, and we're inviting you to participate, and we will, we the DoD will be identifying pandemic potential viruses, and you guys, pharma, will be making vaccines and therapeutics for them within 60 days of us identifying that pandemic potential virus. To which Mark Esser, appropriately reacted, and he said, "I thought it was science fiction," because it is science fiction, right? You can't make vaccines and therapeutics for something in 60 days, and you also cannot identify a pandemic potential virus. You can only make poison and then plan to do a mass poisoning and fake it as a pandemic. That's what they were planning to do. They were just like, inviting these guys with money to join them, and that's how they, there are about 300 organizations in that cartel alone. Most of them are pharmas, a lot of them academics, some other companies. So DoD just, gave money, told a bunch of stories to these scientists who are all too glad to get money to do some science. And no particular deliverables, right? And so that's how they, so the DoD structured that, prepared it, planned it, gamed it. In addition to DoD, they gave lots of money to Hollywood to produce the nonsense like Contagion and Outbreak movies, right?
Yes, the
So
predictive programming,
this
right?
huge amount of planning went into this.
No, you're, I think that's absolutely spot on. You write something, speaking of pandemics, that absolutely blew my mind. I'm not a scientist, but something, when I read this, I knew it to be true in my bones, and I'm not exactly sure why. You said pandemics do not exist naturally. Tell us
Right.
about that.
Right. So, okay. So naturally, they don't exist. I have published several articles on this, including the famous, Spanish flu story, which everybody gets told. But what I found, actually, it wasn't a thing. I found the publication of what at the time, the predecessor of WHO was International Convention, Sanitary Convention. And that started in 1851, and it was like, every few years, about a dozen countries participated, the countries that were involved in international trade and shipping, and they would, get together and they would discuss sanitary measures for primarily for shipping, for, the ship comes into port, how to inspect them for, do they have rats, do they have cholera, so stuff like that. And they were concerned, number one concern was cholera, which is not a virus. It's a bacterial toxin that's in the water. And typically that happens when there's too much crowding, like ship was at sea for a while, and and water is not sanitized, and you have pollution of the water with waste, human and animal waste, right? So that's what they were mostly concerned about, and developing different measures for sanitizing stuff and making sure that you don't introduce it into the local, and all the statistics are, it was mostly cholera, but then there were some other, like the plague also, because the rats carry it. And so when I read their proceedings, they published their proceedings, and there was one convention was in 1912. Then there was First World War, and then this next convention was in 1922. And so between these two conventions, their proceedings are published in British Medical Journal online. I found it. I also linked it on my publication, and you can read it, and you can see that they never mentioned Spanish flu. So we're 4 years after, or 3 4 years after it happened, supposedly. And there's this international body that is supposed to be looking into infectious disease. That's their only goal. They spent 6 months negotiating stuff. They never mentioned Spanish flu Because it wasn't a concern. It wasn't a thing. And in fact, the scope of International Sanitary Convention never included what's so-called respiratory illnesses, because again, nobody was worried about that. So now WHO somehow, like they took over from it, created this WHO organization, and also respiratory illnesses were not covered until very recently. They decided, oh, now it's our scope. So the scope creep, and they decided now it's a thing. Now we're going to propagandize all these, awful pandemics of flu, and under this pretense, we're going to capture a whole bunch of powers. That's how that. So, but generally, pandemics don't exist because, we would not be here if they did. There isn't such a thing that affects, infectious illness. If you believe in the transmission of infections, I don't, other than through water, through bacterial toxins. And that is always localized. If you there were cholera outbreaks, yeah, historical, plague outbreaks, also historical, and they were always localized to that source of water. We don't have a pan source of water ever, that's connected. Yeah, so like it's always a local problem. They always address it locally, and then it extinguishes itself. And there isn't such a thing that like travels all over the world, or they describe in the in this these fear narratives that they establish through Hollywood. That's just nonsense, and that's just to make people crazy to follow all of their nonsensical totalitarian instructions.
I feel like a fool, and I tell this story often. Do you remember in the early days of COVID when the website for Johns Hopkins came up and it had that big interactive map and all the red dots all over the world, and it would constantly be getting bigger? And I remember in the early days, I would log on to that website every day, and I would do whatever kind of amateurish kind of analysis I would do. But looking back on it, I mean, that thing was up within weeks, if not days, of the quote unquote pandemic being declared. I mean, under normal circumstances, a website like that would take months to put together.
Oh,
And
yeah.
all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, there's this highly, highly sophisticated, infrastructure, technological infrastructure meant to capture all this information and meant to scare us, basically. I mean, I feel very silly for having fallen for that, but my only solace is that I was not alone.
Right. So yes, exactly. So they prepared that map, and by the way, that map is showcased in the movie Outbreak, which is the 90s version of the Contagion with Dustin Hoffman and a whole bunch of stars. And they have exact same map in the presidential office where all these dots are, So I mean, that map has been prepared way in advance, and they've paraded it through various Hollywood shows to get everyone accustomed that when these red circles show up, you're supposed to be scared and you're supposed to run and hide. And then whenever the first vaccine is available, you're supposed to immediately run and line up for it. Okay, so that's how that's what. And they still have that map. And they now, Johns Hopkins, I also published on this. They're now pushing this into the K through 12 educational system. They're giving money to school systems to have these like Zoom classes from Johns Hopkins to propagandize children now into their COVID, corps. I mean, this is as Orwellian as it gets, or communist, or whatever you want to call it.
I think that's exactly right. Have they discovered the ultimate weapon here in emergency public health scares? Because that's the ultimate weapon of control, I feel like. If they were to take us to some kind of war, there'd always be a segment of the population that kind of questioned what we were doing. If there was some kind of financial crisis, people would find a way to survive. But the most basic human instinct is the instinct to stay alive and remain healthy. And so if you threaten people with that, you get a lot of obedience, don't you?
Oh yes, of course. And the most perfect scare is the invisible one, right? So, I have this magical dragon over here, and it will attack you, if you don't behave. And you have to listen to me, to my instructions of how to avoid it, right? So that's the most perfect manipulation, is you scare people, and then they when they're scared, they can't think rationally, and then this sort of piled on narrative over years, how they prepared everyone to be triggered by these words. And now they're like, half the society is zombified by this and follows their instructions.
I think that's exactly right. Tell us who Michael Callahan is, because I like your work on this fellow.
Oh yeah, he's the Indiana Jones from CIA. So so he, that's another one. Right? So they paraded him for a while, right? All his infectious disease doctors, and I questioned a bunch of military and CIA affiliated doctors and their degrees and how they got them, and I think a lot of them are fake. Also credentials and publications, because some of these, I started looking into some of this, not specifically him, but there are some other characters that are just, it's not believable, but anyway, so let's assume he does have a real degree. Let's assume he is a doctor, infectious disease. But so this guy, like at the beginning of the pandemic, he is in China, in Wuhan. And when he arrived there, like very, very early on, before that, there were no deaths. As he arrives there, they have a lot of deaths. And he's like, like one of like these firefighters, they're always at the scene of fire, right? So you can say, oh, it's because he needs to do this research in these infectious diseases. But every time he shows up somewhere, people start dying. And that was in Wuhan. And then he flew to Diamond Princess, the cruise ship. And
Crucial.
again, prior to that, there were no deaths. He arrives, there are deaths. What I think he was doing for the military and for the CIA together, I guess, is finalizing the COVID murder protocol with the remdesivir and ventilators. That's what he was doing. So that's probably part of what he was doing. And I can't find any other explanation for this.
Tell us about, for people who are not familiar, people who have been, maybe living under a rock for the last few years, tell us about your background in the pharmaceutical industry, because it is extensive.
Yes, I did. I've worked all my career in pharmaceutical research and development and various roles. And I started more from like consulting. Data, a lot of data crunching for various purposes, for operations, for marketing, for IP, for litigation support. And so that from that on, you kind of learn a lot about the industry. And then, I started my own companies, which were contract research organizations. So they are also kind of, so these are the companies that perform clinical trials. A variety of roles in the clinical trial, and mine were smaller and more specialized in like looking into imaging in clinical trials, for example, better tools, better techniques for imaging, and then the last one was in cardiovascular safety. So we were, performing a specific standard battery of tests that every drug has to go through, and typically they're in early human testing, because you want to figure out early if your drug is going to have arrhythmia potential, then you don't want to develop. Like you want to stop it. You don't want to spend money developing it, only realizing in later stages that, it's a no-go.
Right.
So we were screening for pharma companies in early phases of development, which drugs can potentially cause arrhythmia, and so those would be eliminated from the pipelines.
So you have done research on the batches, on the vaccine batches, the COVID vaccine, the COVID injection batches. And what you found basically was out of the norm of everything you knew to be true in your entire career. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right, so as we work in pharma, it's highly regulated space, and you always have to be in compliance, especially because we were contractors to pharmas. So we could be audited at any time by FDA or by pharma or by like larger CROs that were overall contractors for clinical trials. So we have these numerous layers of audit that we have to always be able to pass. And so you become obsessed about quality and looking at different parameters, like how do you detect that something is breaking down in your process? and identify the root cause. And so one of the things that early on I didn't have any access to data. I was concerned about mRNA technology being pushed as a vaccine because I knew it was danger. It was inherently dangerous. It could never, like, I became a little bit familiar with it during my work, and I knew it was inherently dangerous. It was only developed for very severe terminal illnesses, so it was not even allowed to be given to healthy people. And then, all of a sudden, a few years later, these guys start saying, "Oh, it's going to be a vaccine." I was like, "No, there's no way I'm touching this." And but then I also, once the data started coming out, VAERS was the only a public data set you could look at. And so I started looking into that. And that's when I identified that batch variability problem.
And what you found was that some batches were seemed to be, well, some batches seem to be producing a lot more adverse events than other batches. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, exactly. So first, and I prior to that, I did not use VAERS really. I knew it existed. I knew how to look up things in it, but I was just not a heavy user of it. I always had proprietary databases available to me. So when I went in there and I did the first analysis, there's a field there that says batch number. And you can download data by that field, and you can see. And so what I first I did not realize how polluted that whole database was. Initially it was like when you do this kind of first output, it will come out as like 20,000 different batches in the US. And that's not true. There are only 700. So later on we got a list from CDC of the batches that were released in the US. So that's like verified batch numbers. So a lot of the batch numbers and VAERS turns out they're positioned as typos. You're supposed to believe they are typos. But I also found them having patterns indicative of
Wait,
the.
what does that mean? They're typos.
So that when somebody is typing the batch number from the
Yeah,
card,
right.
so the numbers or letters are mistyped or missing or some weird characters or so, and that creates like illusion that there are 20,000 batches out there or 30,000
Oh,
batches.
so there were 20,000 different typos?
Well, and they're not different. So when I looked at the typos separately, I realized that they also are algorithmically created. So yes, so it's the whoever is running that database for VAERS, and I think there are like two contractors, they're also creating a way to obscure
Can something
the.
be a typo if it's algorithmically created?
Well, they so if you ask CDC, they say, oh, it's just because people are mistyping things.
Right.
But I found patterns. Like I found how there are some typical typos and they're atypical for how people would mistype things. Although there are some that could be human errors, but some just don't look like human errors, especially because they're sort of patterned. Anyway, but that issue aside, eventually I've matched about half of VAERS can be matched to CDC like real batch numbers. And that does not change the answer. You still have gigantic variability. So the variability does not change. All they're doing by this noise, they create a lot of noise so that then they can later deny and say that, oh, well, all of this data is so polluted and so bad. But the pattern is so pronounced that you can't remove it with this method. And so it's still there. And I've published on the verified batches, and there are some of them were extremely horrible. There were thousands of severe adverse events and deaths in one batch, which is it's incredibly bad. I mean, I can't even explain to people how I try to compare them to flu vaccines, for example, like historical flu vaccines, and there's about 30 years of data in that. You can't even put them on the same graph. Like you can't, the scale is so huge, you can't see flu data in it. And so I started like putting a red line on the bottom of the graph saying, okay, all the flu data is under it. Now you see these bars, that's the COVID vaccines.
What, so here's what gets me is that there's no accountability. No one got in trouble for having this wild variations of in these batches. And so it's hard to ascribe innocent reasons for that. People have described these injections as being a mass experiment. I mean, is that consistent with what you've seen?
Yes, except it's a illegal experiment. The reason, yeah, that was my question too. So after all this, I did about a year of VAERS analysis, batch variability is so awful that like we have so many layers of enforcement of pharmaceutical law. And I was just baffled by why nobody is reacting to this. In fact, Ron Johnson early on took my data and sent congressional oversight letters to CDC, FDA.
Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin.
Yes, from Wisconsin. So he's a senator. He's charged with the oversight of this. He wrote congressional oversight letters to all the pharmas and CDC and the FDA. And for the longest time, they just ignored him. And then they called him conspiracy theorist and misinformation spreader. Internally at FDA, Peter Marks wrote emails to his staff about this. And then it was never answered. And then I was like, well, if a senator cannot get it through, congressional oversight letter, and it's so obvious, then like what's going on? Well, how are they able to get away with this, right? And ultimately, I figured out how by I found Catherine Watt, who's my colleague, also writes on Substack, and I found her post on the changes in American law. So she's a paralegal and she does the law research, and so she traced all the changes in the U.S. law that have been done over decades, really, to prepare for this.
I had her on last year. She's great.
Yeah, so she's awesome. So I read her post called "American Domestic Bioterrorism Program," and that explains how they get away with it because they made it legal. Ultimately, they've legalized this. So this whole idea of EUA countermeasures, which all these things are EUA countermeasures, even though FDA is lying and pretending that COVID vaccines are fully approved. They're not fully approved because we're under PREP Act declaration. So we're under public health emergency continuously for COVID and a few other things. And while this is in force, they can issue EUA countermeasures. And these products do not have to comply with any pharmaceutical law, not in a strict enforceable manner. So nobody can enforce pharmaceutical law and compliance and quality and being true to the label and adverse event monitoring, all of those consumer protections that we expect from pharmaceuticals and from food now are suspended and they don't apply to these products in any enforceable manner. That's, in a nutshell, that's what it is. So you have to stay away from anything that's EUA, anything that's under PREP Act declaration. And now they're pushing more and more things. So the PREP Act we have now for not just for COVID, but we have it for Marburg and Ebola. So the US government tells us we have a pandemic of Marburg and Ebola in the US. We also have a pandemic of anthrax. We also have pandemic of pesticides and nerve agents, pandemic of botulism, radiation, Zika. All of those PREP Act declarations are open, and many of them are going through like until 2028 to 27, and they extend them all the time. And so, and they're converting all the vaccines into this mRNA junk.
Do you feel, in your personal opinion, do you feel that the ultimate agenda here is to make people sick? Is it a depopulation agenda? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, so somebody said very well on Substack recently. So, the last official act of failed government is looting, which we've discussed through the financial stuff, but also the very last act is genocide, and that happens over and over and over again. And whether they did plan for the, obviously we found a lot of evidence of pre-planning, premeditation. Who specifically in the US government is fully aware of this? I think initially maybe not so many people. Now I'm pretty sure a lot of them understand what's going on. And Yeah, this was pre-planned. They were planning to reduce the population. They also issued very early on, and there's this famous Kissinger memo on population control, which is very explicit about, the global population targets that they absolutely must keep the population under or else. And then there's a whole bunch of measures of how they're going to control the population and how, and originally they were imposing it all on third world countries, but clearly that the same tactics are now being applied throughout.
What do you think? Because there's no such thing as a perfect crime or a perfect plan. What's the Achilles heel here? What's the weakness in the armor?
Well, the weakness I think is that they probably planned on many more people being fearful and for longer and in compliance. And even though we can say, yes, they diluted about 80% of the population, maybe 75% of the population. Now I can tell for sure that we have much more people who are aware of what's going on. We even, from personally, we know that, okay, so some of our friends fell for this, but now they're not going to take any more injections.
Yes.
So that's a good sign. So people do become aware, people can snap out of this idiocy. And the more these guys push and the more desperate they become, the mask falls off and the more people become aware. So people become aware, start resisting. All of this, the main Achilles heel of this whole scheme is that it relies on people's blindness and compliance. But there are more of us than of them. They can't control us if we are not fearful.
Well, Sasha, the pharmaceutical industry's loss is our gain. I'm very, very glad that you are now on this job. I want you to tell the folks where they can find your Substack because it's must reading at this point. Every post is better than the last, I feel like. Tell the folks where they can find you.
All right, so the Substack, you can look at sashalatypova.substack.com, or the publication name is Due Diligence and Art. And so yeah, and that's free. You can subscribe for free. I appreciate paid subscribers, but all the new posts are free, and then they become archived, and the archive is available to paid subscribers. So yeah, but yeah, I encourage everyone because this is a lot. I published over 300 posts already, and you can search and you can find all this information, including on vaccines. In now they're pushing it into animals and food supply. So I just had a pretty lengthy interview published on it. So yeah, I encourage everyone to subscribe.
You're also a very talented artist. I don't want to let you go without mentioning that.
Yeah, I try, but there's very little time for art these days.
Well, you're too busy saving the world.
Yeah, I know.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time, Sasha. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Please come back real soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for inviting me.